In the area of anger,
it's really interesting.
Neurotic people become immobilized with their anger. Okay? That is, a lot of people think, after having read Erroneous Zones and so on, that I believe that anger is something that's bad. Not at all. That thinking angry thoughts isn't healthy. Not true. What I think is unhealthy is allowing yourself to become immobilized by your anger. So that if most anger is supported by this sentence, in relationships, the sentence is, if only you were more like me, then I wouldn't have to be upset at you right now. You know, so why don't you work at becoming more like I want you to be? In management, that's what managers are telling their employees all day. One of the biggest mistakes that they make, that I get angry at you when you don't do things the way I think that you should do them, and then using anger as a way to try to mobilize people, and it seldom works. Instead of helping people to understand that there are a lot of ways to do things, and that thinking angry when it immobilizes you is a waste of time. So that any time, if you run into an obstacle in your life and you find that you are upset, depressed, immobilized, can't function effectively because of something that you dislike, then you are a candidate for being in this neurotic corner. Your anger is something that you ought to be able to use constructively. And normal people are able to handle their anger so that it doesn't immobilize them. They can contain it. They can not think angry and get themselves all worked up. They still keep it bottled up inside of them very often, often producing ulcers and getting themselves really worked up, but they don't ever let it out. And if you ask me, is it healthier to let out what you are feeling in terms of frustration rather than keeping it in? The neurotic is better off. You're better off to take a pillow and slam it up against or scream out or whatever, as long as you don't do it against other people and abuse them. You're better off getting rid of it. But you know, there's a much higher place that no limit people are able to get to. And that is right here in the whole area of being mobilized by your anger. All right? What don't you like in the world? What are the things that you find really offensive? You don't like hunger? You don't like children dying out there? I hate it. I get angry at it. I really do. The fact that any human being has to die because they can't get fed when we have enough food to feed everybody in enough technology. When I think about us getting ready to go to war again and killing and killing and killing more people, I don't like that. I get very upset about things like that. Now, what do you do with it? Well, the neurotic flails out and gets all upset and yells at everybody else and finds fault with everybody, and that's it. This person kind of just feels it and keeps it in. This person is a doer. This person does something about that. They are mobilized by it. They get involved in something like the Hunger Project. They write letters to Congress, and they get on television and do something about it. They go over to Cambodia if they have to. They write songs about it. They try to raise consciousness about it. They try to elect officials or maybe even run for office themselves to try to change the injustices of the world. They are doers. They take their frustrations and turn them into constructive good for themselves, or humanity, whereas these people just kind of keep it in, and these people just flail around. You see the difference? We all have things about ourselves and about our lives that we don't like, and which we have anger about because of the way that we think. But the way that you deal with it just depends on where you are on that ladder that I talked about earlier. The neurotic person over here, and this is most people now, we're talking 77% of the people in our culture, according to some of the research studies, are more on this scale than anything else, are what we call externally motivated. Externally motivated. What do I mean by externally motivated? There are people who allow the externals of their life to determine where they're going and what they're doing in their lives. The externals are, let's say you're a drug user. How do you counsel a drug user? Why do we have so many of them? If you're right here and you use drugs a lot, let's say you go up to 3 out of 4 people and you say, who are down, depressed, and you say to them, why are you down? Why are you depressed? What's wrong? 3 out of 4 people that you go up to, try it as an experiment tomorrow, will say, she made me angry.
She hurt my feelings. They made things go bad for me. The stock market is down. I can't seem to get along with my parents. They make me depressed. Whatever it may be, they will use someone or something outside of themselves to explain away why they are the way they are when they're down. Now, how does a person like that, who is wired together with that kind of internal circuitry, how does that kind of a person escape? How do they get high? How do they get up? How can they do that? Well, if you blame someone or something else outside of yourself, external to you, for being down, then you rely on someone or something external to yourself to get you up. And what is someone or something external to yourself to get up? What do we use to get up when we're external? We use alcohol. So one out of every 18 people in our culture are confirmed alcoholics in need of treatment. We use drugs in order to get ourselves high. We use approval of other people. We use money. We use trying to get ahead on the ladder of success. We use anything outside of ourselves to bring us up. You see? And so here you've got a person who goes down because of someone else, who goes up because of someone else or something else, and doesn't have any control over him or herself. That's most people in our culture. The normal person is a combination of internal and external. This external person over here looks for approval from other people, uses any kind of substance, uses explanations, is a blamer, will blame everybody and everything else for why they are the way they are. It's the starving children over in Cambodia, that's why I'm fat, because I have to eat their food. It's Sara Lee who really made me fat. It's my parents, it's God, it's whatever. It's always something outside of themselves. This person here is rather a combination of the two. More to the external, but still having some inner directedness. This is a person who, when things are not going well, knows in their own heart that they're responsible for it, but doesn't seem to have a handle on what to do about it, how to get out of it. By the way, television preaches externality. It teaches it. Do you know that the NEA did a study recently in which they found that the average child in our civilization, in the United States and Canada, in Western Europe, spends 1/14 the time in direct communication with their parents and 13/14 of the time in front of a television set. That's incredible when you think about it. Something like 7% versus 93% of the time that a child is in direct communication with someone is being raised by television. Television has almost become a babysitter. Children know everything that goes on television. They know every commercial. They are taught external. Buy this product. Look at all the situation comedies and so on. They're a hodgepodge of teaching people to have disregard for others, to make smart aleck remarks to others. You know, every program on television, one smart aleck put down after the other, over and over and over again. That's what television has become. The endless top-rated shows that we have in our country are kids, adults, all putting each other down all the time. Just watch it. Smart aleck, smart aleck, smart aleck remark, and very little regard for human dignity, and the commercials over and over again.
Jealousy, anger, depression, fear, negativity of any kind are things that a lot of people spend a lot of time defending, and they're hardly worth defending at all. Most anger is immobilizing. You look back on angry moments and you would rather not have been angry if you had the choice. Wars are caused by angry moments and people responding with anger. Jealousy is a very interesting emotion. Jealousy is a put-down of the self. It is a reflection of self-contempt that a person has. You can't grow if you feel there's a lack in your life, because you're always repairing the lack, all right? And so growth is impossible. Jealousy means to take somebody else's decision to love someone else or behave towards someone else in a way that you wish they hadn't, and to assess that decision as having something to do with you. That's what jealousy is. If someone that I love, and I'm a no-limit person, if that's how I feel about myself, and if someone that I love decides to be with someone else, spend time with someone else, make love to someone else, I would never say to myself that that means there's something wrong with me because that person made that decision. I would look upon it as, how foolish could someone be to want to go out and get hamburger when they've got steak at home? To me, I would see it as somebody else's decision to be where they are, having nothing to do with me. I might make a decision if I were in a marriage or whatever that I wouldn't want to be in a relationship with someone who would conduct themselves that way towards someone else. I might. Or on the other hand, I might decide, well, if that's okay, I can accept that as well. If you're talking about sexual jealousy or jealousy in love relationships and so on. If you believe you're valuable and somebody else doesn't believe you are, that's the same as your reputation. Your reputation is in other people's hands. It's just their opinions. I am what I choose to believe about myself. And I might make a whole lot of decisions on it. It sounds all very clinical, and it sounds like it's an easy thing to do. But if you understand and look at your jealousy and understand what there is to learn from it, and what a great gift it is. I went through a horrible jealous experience when I was in my early 20s. And I was immobilized for 4 or 5 months over it and kept reliving it. And after I finally got over it, I made a decision about jealousy. I said, this is just a reflection of your own inability to love yourself. Your own inability to love yourself. If you loved yourself enough and thought of yourself as valuable enough, you would never make somebody else's decision not to love you have anything to do with you. And I've never had a jealous moment since. I made a conscious decision not to be jealous. I wasn't raised to look at what other people have and be jealous because I didn't have it. I was never raised to look at the neighbor who got a brand new car and say, oh, that's not fair. They got a new car and I didn't. To this day, in all these years of my life, I've never had a car payment. I've never had a car payment because somehow I was raised or I believed that until you could pay for it, it wasn't yours. And that because somebody else has it, that's their good fortune. And I used to think how great it is that somebody else had something, even as a child, and never think that I should have it because they had it. One time I saw a beautiful car that I just thought was the most beautiful thing in the world. And it was my neighbor who had it. And I loved the color. I loved the shape of it. And I got this image in my mind of myself driving that car. And instead of being jealous that that person had that, I just started saving my money. I started putting the focus on the solution to that thing. And within a matter of months, I was able to trade in the car that I had. And I had the exact, and I had the car, I had it, everything. It was the car I think I was the most proud of ever in my life. But it had nothing to do with jealousy. Jealousy will just keep you from effectively going after what you want. Right? It's an immobilizer. It's not a mobilizer.
Over here is the no-limit person. And this is one of the crucial variables of the no-limit person. They are inner-directed. They consult their inner signals to decide what is right or wrong for themselves and to decide about their own life mission and what they're going to do. How do you become inner-directed? How do you get a hold of inner-directedness? Because that, in all the studies that have been done on self-actualizations, on highly functioning people, on emotionally mature people, is that they have that quality of being able to say to themselves, this is what has meaning for me, and I have to do it because I believe it's right, even if I fly in the face of criticism from everybody else down the line. Most of our children have that sense of inner directedness. And then they get into schools and institutions where they're taught. You see, if you go into most schools, the schools, and you ask for the philosophy of education, the philosophy of education will say something like, we at this particular school encourage the full self-development and individual self-actualization of each child that we attempt to educate. We want to provide curricular interventions which will give the individual development and specific self-actualization goals to each child that comes through our door. And that is so much nonsense. Because in fact, when you see young people beginning to display the qualities of being no-limit people, of inner-directedness, of saying to the teachers, wait a second, why? of saying to the principals and the administrators, how come? How come we have these kind of regulations? And maybe we could change some of these things. When you have kids saying, I'd like to study this, and this seems to make more sense to me, and challenging authority and so on, then we do just about everything we can in our schools to see that those kinds of sparks of self-actualization are squashed and doused quickly. Anybody who's a leader in any field is somebody who has trusted their inner signals rather than somebody who's played the game the right way. You can count on that, except in government. And government can give you an example of how things never ought to be run. If you want to see what doesn't work, just look at almost everything the government gets its hands on. And it's true. That's why I strongly believe in the least amount of government that we can have, and that the government ought to be out of virtually everything. I think no one ever said that better than Ayn Rand back in 20 and 30 years ago in her writing. That if you were coming through customs, as I did recently at Heathrow Airport, and look at what happens at Heathrow with 3 and 4 hour delays to stand in lines after being on a transatlantic flight, almost you can just count on it. And I always think to myself, if they just had two or three companies who competed for customs and provided the same services and had them competing for who would go through whose customs, boy, you'd get zipped through customs and the same kind of service would be, only it would be very efficient and everything would be done very well. But when government gets in it and there's literally no concern and there's unlimited amounts of money and so on, then, you know, things get messed up. The least government and the people who will get my vote are the people who really try to dismantle that awesome bureaucracy that we have. Inner directedness is more than just being a rebel, though. It is like every operational phase of your life. You don't get up and do the things that you do in your life because you're supposed to or because other people are telling you to. You're doing them because they make the greatest amount of sense to you. And trusting those inner signals, I call it, in some of my writing, trusting your instincts. There's a chapter in The Sky's the Limit that I call First Be a Good Animal. And that is, we all have instincts about what is right for us. We seldom follow those instincts. Too often we think about what we should do, what we must do, what we ought to do, instead of what works right for me. Remember E.E. Cummings, the famous American poet, wrote back in the 1920s from Massachusetts? He had a little poem that really described this. It just came to mind. Let me share. It's called, Here is Little Effie's Head. And Effie is this woman who has died. And God is now coming down to claim the body. And God is alarmed at what he sees. And Cummings puts it this way. This is a portion of it. Here is little Effie's head. Her brains are made of gingerbread. When the judgment day comes, God will find 6 crumbs stooping by the coffin lid, waiting for something to rise, as the somethings always did. Imagine his surprise, bellowing above the general noise, where is Effie? She was dead. And back to God in a tiny voice, my name is Maybe, the first crumb said. Whereupon the other 5 crumbs chuckled as if they were alive. And number 2 crumb picked up the song. Might, I'm called. I've done no wrong, cried the 3rd crumb. I am should. Here's our little brother, could. And our big brother, would. Don't punish us, for we've been good. And the 3rd crumb, with some shame, whispered unto God, my name is Must, and with the others, we've been Effie, who isn't alive. Cross the threshold, have no dread. Lift the sheet back in this way. Here is little Effie's head. Brains are made of gingerbread. Isn't that wonderful? E.E. Cummings. Would, thank you. Would, could, should, might, maybe, must. The things that neurotics are made of. We should have done it this way. If only we would have done it this way. We could have done it that way. And you hear it all the time. I've heard it all my life.
About what you should have done and what you could have done. And the fact is that you can never could have done anything other than the way you did it. It's impossible.
When I went up to Minnesota and was giving a talk, and I landed there, and the driver picked me up, and I said, "It's beautiful here. Look at the leaves. Look at that fantastic, these colors." It was in October. He said, "Nothing. You should have been here last week." I said, "I can never should have been here last week. This week." He said, "Oh boy, I got one of those crazy shrinks." I mean, it goes on and on and on. At the telephone, people, when you have to have your lights put on, and I called up, and it was on Friday, I said, "I'd like to have my electricity turned on." The clerk said, "You should have called on Wednesday." I said, "I beg your pardon? Hello, 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 hello. I think I got a wrong number." He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Is this Earth?" "Earth, of course it's Earth." I said, "Well, on Earth where I've lived all my life, you can never should have called on Wednesday, on Friday. You can't do that." She said, "I think you better talk to my supervisor." That's what clerks say, you know, thinking, you know, that a supervisor was going to victimize me even further. It took me four supervisors before I got someone who understood that I didn't want to be told what I should have done on Wednesday, because on Friday you could never have called on Wednesday on Friday. You can't do that here. You can't go into rewind and go backwards, all right? And how many people lead their lives that way? Yeah, what do we have? 3,000 people. Do you realize that if every one of you in 1916 would have bought 5 shares... Coca-Cola stock, you would all be millionaires today. I know what you're going to say.
You weren't even born yet, some of you.
You could have been, you know? You could have been, right? Don't you hear people talking like that all the time?
I'll be playing double tennis with my partner, okay? And I do this all the time, just kind of for fun, but I'll be over here and be covering the alley, you know? And shot will go by me, shoot, right down the alley like that. My partner says, "You should have covered the alley."
I said, "Never could have, should have covered the alley. You can't do that."
He said, "Well, you covered the damn alley." "That I can do. I can cover the alley.
But I can't should have covered the alley, you see?"
So telling people what they should have done is not constructive.
How many times have your kids come home at 5 o'clock when they were supposed to have called you at 3 o'clock, right? "You should have called at 3. Kid knows you're talking to a banana right now. This kid knows. This is a crazy person he's talking to, right? He knows that you can never should have called at 3 o'clock. Now if you say, "Tomorrow, if you don't call at 3 o'clock, the following kinds of things are perfect," then they have a complete understanding. But berating somebody for what they should have done, or could have done, or would have done, is of course a waste of time.